Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. Fancy Brian, you've got me nearly stunned. Breaking news from the top. Let me say hi to Evan first. Evan here in the world headquarters. Devil Radio, lightly screening the calls. So we'll get to the phones in a bit at 844-967-2789. And I'm going to ask you for a source, Fancy Brian. But you broke no... You broke... Easy for me to say. You broke news to me as we're going on the air. And this, as far as we're concerned, here in the great state of Wisconsin, Fancy Brian, this is stunning news.
I'm told in the last 10, 15 minutes that Donald Trump has endorsed Tim Michaels for governor.
Oh, that's got to sting Rebecca Clayfish. Damn, that's got to sting. And Tim Rantham, the whole justification for Tim Rantham's existence here in the state of Wisconsin, Republican, fringer, lunatic, maybe, gubernatorial candidate. His whole reason to exist was to decertify and overturn the last electoral college count. So Rantham's all in on a big lie. Rebecca Clayfish, I mean, she's gone rigged election on this one. And Tim Michaels, who, what, Fancy Brian, they must share a resume. You know, both had rich daddies that, you know, kind of put him on third base and let him think they were successful. Something like that. What do you think the appeal is? Because Michaels said, maybe rigged. Maybe rigged. But the rest, they were full on rigging. So how did Trump endorse, you know, the rich guy's kid?
I am looking into that right now. It was confirmed by Luke on the end of the show. Weber was talking about it, and a couple different folks are saying so. I'm trying to find actual, like, it just broke within the last 15
minutes.
You
better
not
be T-bowing me.
I'm not T-bowing you, man. I asked for a source myself when I was told about it. So, we'll check in on it. We'll go and make sure that we get the entire story. But,
I feel sure you'll be completely vindicated.
For sure.
Better be.
I will.
Fancy Brian. You know, we got some other topics. The president of the United States, Joe Biden, my president, your president, is going to address the nation tonight, a primetime speech. And the purpose of this speech, gun violence. He's going to address the gun violence. Saw new statistics out today, Fancy Brian. We have now achieved 231 mass shootings of four or more casualties, not including the shooter, just to clarify the terms. And we've not had a week this year, the entire year of 2022, where we've had less than four mass shootings. So, you know, it's starting to be a quote-unquote problem? Question mark? Will there be action? Well, that's a better question. You know, Fancy Brian, I think we got some sound. Eric Swalwell. Swalwell is a Democratic rep, and Swalwell gave some, I guess you'd call it testimony, damn near, in the judiciary hearing today. And I better set the stage a little bit better. You guys need a little bit of context. The House Judiciary Committee is holding an hours-long meeting as Democrats advance a package of gun reform measures. So this is in the House Judiciary Committee. A couple of updates from this big meeting. That guns moment when Rep. Greg Stube, Republican from Florida, who was attending the hearing virtually from his home, pulled out several handguns on screen, pulled out his guns. You know, I don't think he No, not like your guns, Vance Brand. Big old guns. You know, pulled out the literal guns. Anyways, he was making a point about the proposed legislation that would affect firearms, like his, drawing a response from Rep. Sheila Jackson. I hope that gun's not loaded. His response, in my house, I can do whatever I want with my guns. So apparently they are loaded. At least one must assume. Some poetry. Rep. Madeline Dean, Democrat from Pennsylvania, who was visibly upset, referenced a famous 17th century poem by John Donne, telling her colleagues, stop asking for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for us. There was an unexpected shout out. Republicans accused Democrats of wanting to abolish the Second Amendment, referenced as his example, Michael Moore. You know, the progressive filmmaker who became well known in the early 2000s. Committee Chair Gerald Nadler noted after the name dropped that he wasn't aware that Michael Moore was a Democratic member of the House. And there's the ranch predators, you know, Ken Buck, Republican, if you have to know, from Colorado, gave an example of how the gun laws are used in Colorado. In rural Colorado, an AR-15 is the gun of choice for killing raccoons before they get to our chickens. If the gun of choice, it's also the gun of choice for killing a fox. You know, lots of foxes and raccoons in the hen house.
I do have a fox that runs down my street, actually right on the sidewalk, but I never thought about, gee, I need to kill it.
You know, foxes are beautiful creatures. I love the foxes. What would the fox say? But let me read on. And the filibuster. The filibuster is a product of the Senate, but members of the committee are frequently referencing the 60-vote threshold. Progressive Rep. Mondaire Jones, Democrat from New York, vowed that Republicans couldn't prevent Democrats from passing gun legislation and that if the filibuster obstructs us, we will abolish it. Now, Senate Democrats do not have the votes, as they call it, to do that. I wish they would. So where is this bill going? The House Judiciary Committee is eventually expected to vote on the bill, which would raise the age, you know, from 18 to 21, ban high-capacity magazines, and require a background check for buying a ghost gun. After that, House Democrats want to go to the floor next week, in addition to a separate vote on the red flag legislation from Rep. Lucy McBeth. But the package faces a buzzsaw in the Senate, where a bipartisan group's trying to negotiate their own deal, you know, on mental health and red flags and such. Fancy Brian, while there's time, let's see if we can get started with a little bit of the sound of Eric Swalwell. I thought he was very straightforward, let's just say. Let's start playing it. Cut 20.
19 kids are dead. 19 children are dead. And so to my Republican colleagues, I ask, who are you here for? Are you here for our kids, or are you here for the killers? Because if you were here for the kids, you would do all you could to protect the next school shooting that's about to happen. And we know what's going to happen in America. You would vote to raise the age on purchasing an assault rifle. You would vote to ban high-capacity magazines. You would vote to require safe storage, and you would vote to address ghost guns, which are ravaging communities across America. But if you're here for the killers, you would do everything to make it easier for the next school shooting to happen. And Mr. Jordan, to say we are trying to dramatically change the country, if trying to make sure that no more kids are put in the ground with a Superman coffin means dramatically change the country, guilty. That's why we're here. Kids are going in the ground today, and you call that trying to dramatically change the country. Why aren't you trying to dramatically change the number of dead kids going into the ground, Mr. Jordan? Who are you here for, the kids or the killers?
Pretty stark language from Eric Swalwell. A little bit more. Do we have time for more of Swalwell? Let's do so. Cut 21.
My Republican colleagues are here for carnival games. They say it's about mental health. Okay, we try and fund mental health. They vote against it. They say it's about schools. We try and fund the schools, fund the teachers. They vote against it. They say it's about policing. $300 million in the American Rescue Plan for community policing. They all voted against it. And they don't want to listen to the police. If they listened to the police, they'd listen to the major cities' chiefs who have called for background checks, red flag laws, banning bum stocks, and banning high-capacity magazines. My favorite, it's about the family. We need to address the family issues in America. But we don't want to help feed a family. We're going to make it harder for kids to live on food stamps. We don't want to help a family learn. We're going to go after teachers in America. We don't want to help kids go to college. We don't want to give them jobs. We're going to vote against the infrastructure and jobs bill.
Let's play one more if there's time, Fancy Brian. Let's do 22, Eric Swalwell, the source House Judiciary Committee.
And then they say that laws don't work. But they have no problem crafting laws to take away a woman's right to make her own healthcare decision. That law must work. They have no problem going after laws to ban drugs. There's plenty of laws on the books to ban drugs. But no, it's all about the person. Laws don't work when you have evil in our country. That's what they tell us. And then they tell us that we're in a country where you have violent video games, mental health problems, schools that can't be secured, and too many gun-free zones. And their solution to that is to put more of the most dangerous weapons into that mix. That's insane.
Eric Swalwell makes a fairly convincing, at least to my opinion, fairly convincing argument today in the House Judiciary Committee. And before we're done, we'll come back with the sound, the response, if you will, because somebody took a lot of offense to being, you know, analogized to, you know, supportive of the killers just because they got nothing to offer but thoughts and prayers, no legislative remedies. And I thought Swalwell was damning as he enumerated. Here's what we're going to do on this big show. We're going to try and come up with some logical, sensible solutions. We're going to solve some problems right here. You and me and Fancy Brian and Evan. A, you got to call us at 844-967-2789. And B, you got to stick around because we're going to offer some solutions. But before we do, we've got to, you know, fair and balanced and all that kind of stuff. Offer equal time to those that responded to Swalwell. And we'll also bring you a little more sound of Swalwell. And Fancy, did I mention I got invited on the Foxy News this weekend? Not going. But clearly I didn't win the battle to not get invited back. More Devils. We'll be right back.
We got to do something.
Absolutely.
That's a great idea. Okay, how do we do that?
Loud noise!
Listening to the Devil's Advocates may expose you to opposing views.
This song was effectively the anthem of my college life. Fancy Brian, Evan, Rudy, and you on the phone said 844-967-2789. That's a little tease. The response coming from a Republican congressman. You'll have to guess who. A couple more from Swalwell, though, if we could, Fancy Brian. Cut number 23, again, this from the House Judiciary Committee earlier today. Eric Swalwell, he's not a state rep, he's a congressional rep. But Swalwell, I thought, laid out a hell of a sidewinder, sort of targeting the Republicans that do nothing but offer thoughts and frickin' prayers. Cut 23, please.
They're also out of touch with the overwhelming majority of gun owners in America. An organization called 97% just put out a poll that said among gun owners, and they only polled gun owners, 86% support background checks, 76% support safe storage, 67% support red flag laws. Those are gun owners. So who are you here for? Our kids or the killers?
And again, it goes on starkly like this. One more from Swalwell, cut 24, if you would, Fancy.
If you're not here for the children, why don't you go to the funeral of the killer? Because that's the only place where the killer is being celebrated. We're here to get things done and protect our kids. What's your job?
And he concluded. And Louie Gohmert, Republican rep, well, Louie went went next. And Louis was outraged, I tell you, outraged by the tone of his colleague's language, not by the deaths. How dare you try to cast the blood upon the Republicans? Let's just play it for the people. Cut 26, please.
To infer by rhetorical supposed questions, who are you here for? We must be here for the gunman, is an outrage. How dare you? You think we don't have hearts? It's just that when we look at the things that you're doing and you're trying to do to America, we've seen the carnage. I mean, for heaven's sake, let's take example. Democrats control the major cities that have the worst murder rates. That's right. Your ideas have been shown to get people killed.
Your ideas have been shown to get people killed, according to Louis Gohmert. And, you know, so you hear these very harsh words being cast back and forth. And Gohmert would accuse the Democrats of what? Having policies that get people killed. They're soft on crime, open borders, whatever the hell else Louis Gohmert thinks. And of course, Eric Swalwell, equally harsh in his assessment of the Republican Party. Because their solutions, their thoughts and prayers, they don't work. Or at least they're not working here. When you got 231 mass shootings in America this year so far, maybe we got to try something different. 844-967-2789. Greg calling in from the Shaw. Greg, welcome. What do you got?
Hey, Mike. I'm first of all excited that you guys are in the Shaw, and excited to meet you tomorrow night at Friday Night Live, hopefully.
Looking forward to the party.
Yeah, it'll be awesome. So I just wanted to call in and say that I'm not sure that the solutions that we're looking for with these things come from the government, other than the fact that the government provides money to, you know, do work in schools, such as character education, you know, educating our kids to, you know, I guess be, you know, on those mental health topics and hiring counselors and things like that. So the government does provide that. But I think.
But the government's insufficiently providing that sort of care, Greg. And I don't disagree with you. It's not all the inanimate objects that are guns, right? You know, the guns don't kill the people. People kill people. But the fact that we give guns and allow mentally ill people not to receive the care they need. The issues I have, Greg, and I think what Eric Swalwell so articulately said, is effectively you can't call for mental health and then not fund the mental health. You know, then you got to put the money behind those therapists and actually staff up those schools. I mean, if kids feel like they're part of a community, they're a lot less likely to shoot up their community. And I've been reading a lot of articles here of late, Greg, about, you know, what makes a serial killer or more accurately, a mass shooter. And, you know, a lot of it is sort of a disconnectedness with their society. It's, you know, they can be nurtured out of being mass killers, but we're not offering them any sort of care, Greg. So, you know, it takes action, not just words. And I'm not suggesting you're calling for action with, or pardon me, words with no action, but you go.
Right. I just think that I've seen a lot of results to, like, I've been an educator in the schools. I myself am totally blind. So I go into the schools and, you know, talk to kids about, you know, values and just how they can live their lives, you know, in a better way. And I think it is on the schools. But again, like you said, those schools need to be funded appropriately. Those programs need to be funded proper, you know, appropriately. I've also worked at a community center, which was really effective at getting kids. But again, that requires money And it doesn't sound like a lot of the people on the right now are willing to spend the money to fund the kind of reforms that are needed.
Greg, I think you make an excellent point. Thank you for listening on 540 AM and the Shaw 101 FM. We are going live from Friday Night Live, the broadcast. Crudy, the special guest host for week one, the debut. Looking forward to it.
I've never really felt it was society's responsibility to take care of other people's children.
That was called action, not with the mouth.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I believe it's a Thursday, which means it's Friday Eve. Always looking forward to the weekend around here. And we're looking forward to your calls at 844-967-2789. Jeannie from Eau Claire, welcome back, Jean. What do you got?
Hi, guys. I'm really glad you're covering this topic. I watched it, and honest to goodness, I could hardly stand it.
You're talking about the House Judiciary Committee, Jeannie?
Yes, and I was just nauseated, you know. There's no more excuses for their sick and barbaric comments and behaviors. You know, their responses included blaming Democrats, and they even had the kahunas to say, well, no one's standing up for the rights of 18-year-olds. You know, this is about protecting children, teachers, families, worshipers, medical personnel, shoppers. You know, I mean, this is about protecting the people in our country. And they had no concerns, expressed no concerns regarding the deaths of the kids and others. I mean, you know, I mean, they've been avoiding any concerns about people for a very, very long time. And, you know, the thing that really got me is when they were saying, the Democrats are bullying. They're bullying us. And I thought, why, you son of a guns, you're nuts. You know, the only solution is to fire their butts and get them the heck out of there. We have to do it. People have to wake up because these guys are a bunch of sickos. They haven't done one thing about any issue at all. And the only thing that comes out of their mouth is, it's the Democrats' fault. It's Biden's fault. You know what I mean? And they have no solutions, not any. And oh, our rights, our rights, our rights. Well, what about the rights of the people that have been shot and killed? What about, you know, it's just the massacres. And that's all they are, is massacres. And then they go, oh, the Democrats are making it political. Give me a break. These people should have been canned a long time ago, and if we don't vote them out, it's our own goddamn fault, because it's just, you know, it's sick. You can't get through to these people. We can't blame Trump for this. This is the Republican Party. These are the people making these decisions. Trump's on the side. He's not controlling this. I don't know who's controlling the Republicans, but they are responsible for their own behaviors and decisions.
Let me interrupt you, and I don't mean to be rude, but
okay.
The Republicans, you know, if you talk about your neighbors who may have voted for Trump and might be Republican, and hell, they might even go hunting, they might even have a weapon, the vast majority of them think like we do, Gene. On the vast majority of these issues, statistically, the polling tells us people want universal background checks. They want red flag laws, even Republicans, even gun owners, Gene. They want these things.
I'm a gun owner. I want rules.
What kind?
I don't think just anybody should have guns.
What kind of gun you got, Jeannie?
Huh?
What kind of gun you got?
Well, we got a few. I don't want to, you know, just name them off, but well protected. But you know what? The point is, gladly give them up if it prevented people from getting slaughtered, massacred, murdered.
And Jeannie, you don't think there's any common ground? I mean, Democrats can be as harsh in their assessment in the House Judiciary as they want to be, and then it's got to go past the Senate. And it doesn't matter what we as quote-unquote Democratic supportive people might think, Gene. Until we find some sort of common ground, we're going to be right back to nothing and thoughts and prayers unless the Senate side, they find, you know, some common ground with the John Cornyns and a few of the moderate Republicans where they could actually move something forward. Jeannie, do you
where
think they
the
should?
Moderates? Where are the moderates, Trudy? All I heard was BS. I didn't hear any ideas. I didn't hear any compromises. I didn't hear anything. All I heard was it's the Democrats' fault, and you're bullying us, and, you know, we got to protect the 18-year-olds, and it's our right. And oh, it was just sick. It really was. Absolutely no empathy whatsoever for the people who lost their children, people who lost their loved ones. Nada. These people are stoic, and they're bad news, and they're ill. And if we support that kind of behaviors, we're up the creek without a paddle because there's no working with them. And you can see it. And when you watch them, it's like, just like the people were in the state of Wisconsin, when all the people came down there to express concerns when you guys were covering what was happening in our Capitol during Scott Walker, I'd call every one of them. They'd bomb me out for what I'd think of, you know, what I'm thinking. I call these offices of these Republicans, and I let them know, hey, you guys got to do something about this. It's pathetic. And they're getting phone calls because they're answering their phones, but they don't give one iota, just like the ones in Wisconsin, about what the people think. And so people call. Experience it yourself. Watch it, and then you'll see. Don't listen to me. You know, I could be biased, but I think it's a really important exercise for everybody to do. And call them. If you don't like this, call them. That's what they're there for. In fact, they're answering their phones right now because they're probably keeping a record of, you know, how many yeses and how many noes and that type of thing. So, anyway, I didn't mean to go on and on, Crudy, but thank you so much for the work you guys are doing. You're outstanding. Thank you.
Jeannie, thanks for listening. 844-967-2789. Be like Jeannie. But Fancy Brian, we often complain about what the problem is, and we even try to, you know, place blame occasionally around here. But maybe there are some solutions to be offered. I'm going to share some of someone else's. These are Robert Gebelhoff. He is an assistant editor and opinions contributor at the Washington Post. And he offers these six opinions for solutions to gun violence that could work. Not saying in every circumstance and every single time ever, but they could reduce the number of gun deaths and maybe even some of the mass shootings. So I'm going to jump in, and I'd love to hear from you as well. You tell me, are these supportable solutions? Democrats, Republicans, I don't care what your stripe is, can you support the following? As the author writes, for far too long, those who oppose gun reforms have said that nothing can be done to stem the violence. Those claims are demonstrably wrong. Research on gun violence is notoriously underfunded, but the data we do have shows that well-designed gun laws informed by science can save lives. So let's list off some possible solutions. And again, your opinion's welcome here at 844-967-2789. Number one, ban on weapons of war. The Las Vegas massacre, the killing spree at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, the movie theater shooting in Aurora, the Virginia Tech slaughter, the massacre at Walmart in El Paso. These are the five highest casualty, death and injuries combined, mass shootings in modern American history. And what do they all have in common? Semi-automatic weapons that allowed the shooter to fire rounds into crowds without reloading. Based on the evidence we have, banning these weapons probably won't do too much to curb overall gun deaths. We know this because in 1994, Congress passed legislation to outlaw the sale of certain types of semi-automatic guns and large capacity magazines. And the effect was unimpressive. Gun homicide rates declined during the ban, but they also continue to fall after the ban expired in 2004. One federally funded study of the ban found that the effects of violence was insignificant, partly because it's full of loopholes. But banning so-called assault weapons was never meant to reduce overall gun deaths. It was meant to make America's frustratingly common mass shootings less deadly, even if these horrific events represent a small portion of the gun violence. But folks, I would remind you, 231 incidents this year, mass shootings in our country. Let me read on. And in fact, mass shooting casualties dipped during the ban, although a study of by the RAND Corporation found the role the ban played in the dip to be inconclusive. Here's what is certain from the research. Semi-automatic weapons and weapons with high-capacity magazines are more dangerous than other weapons. One study on handgun attacks in New Jersey in the 90s showed that gunfire incidents involving semi-automatic weapons wounded 15% more people than shootings with other weapons. A more recent study from Minneapolis found that shootings with more than 10 shots fired accounted for between 20 and 28% of gun victims in the city. So how do we keep dangerous weapons from being used in crimes? A ban on assault weapons might help. A data from a few cities during the 1994 ban suggests, but experts say focusing on reducing larger capacity magazines might be more effective. Simply put, gunmen are less deadly when they have to reload. Such a ban may take time to take effect, a 2003 Post investigation showed, but it would be worth it. Alarmingly, crime data suggests that crimes committed with high-powered weapons have been on the rise since the 1994 ban ended. And again, mass shootings account for only a small fraction of gun deaths. So any ban on these weapons and magazines would result in marginal improvements at best. But even if this step reduced shootings by 1%, far less than what the Minneapolis study suggests, that would mean 650 fewer people shot a year. The author asked, isn't that worth it? Again, you can contribute 844-967-2789. Fancy, you've got a contribution.
When you're dealt lemons, you get lemonade, right? You try and make lemonade. We've been dealt with a whole bunch of mass shootings, and the upside to that, if there is any, is that we have a lot of data on them. And if we don't use it to as much effect as we possibly can, then what is wrong with us? No matter what the solution ends up being, like you said, there's no one solution that's going to be, oh, there's the button. It's all going to go away and everything's going to be glorious right now.
The simple button or whatever it's called.
Yeah, you're going to have to cast a wide net. You're going to have to go and reduce likelihoods and you know, making them have to reload is one of them for sure.
Well, here's another solution offered by this author at the Washington Post. How about we keep guns away from kids? Occasionally, gun reform advocates call for raising the federal age limit for purchasing semi-automatic weapons to 21, as is already required for handguns. But why stop there? Why not raise the age for all guns, including non-automatic rifles and shotguns? This could make a real difference because young people are far more likely to commit homicide than older cohorts. One survey of prison inmates looked at those convicted of using a legally owned gun to commit a crime and found that a minimum age requirement of 21 would have prohibited gun possession in 17% of cases. So did you get all that? The 18 to 21 year olds are using guns, even legally possessed guns, like nearly one in five of crimes, violent crimes. The author goes on to write, of course, keeping guns out of the hands of young shooters would be difficult because it's so easy for people to obtain guns illegally. But age limits in general have proved to be effective in limiting bad behavior. So it's worth trying. Didn't we used to have an 18-year-old drinking age in the state of Wisconsin? I mean, the federal government just threatened highway funds. And guess what? Tony Earl buckled and boom, it's a 21-year-old drinking age. You know, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson wasn't even aware what the drinking age was in the state of Wisconsin. And his point of view was, well, if you're old enough to go to a war and kill somebody, you should be old enough to have a beer. And I would flip that logic and say, you know, if you're not old enough to have a beer, maybe you shouldn't be able to go into Dick's Sporting Goods or, you know, whatever their offshoot brand is, Field and Stream, and buy an AR-15 assault weapon. I mean, it's one thing if you're in the military and they're trying to teach you to be a killing machine. You know, they like the 18 to 20-year-olds. They have less remorse. They're more moldable into killing machines. That and the push-ups and the sit-ups come easier. Come back. More Devil's Advocates on the other side. You can always join us. More solutions and more of your phone calls at 844-967-2789.
The House of Representatives has passed on to the Senate, and the Senate's getting ready to do something. Hopefully it'll get done where we will come up with a solution and a really good one.
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We almost made it through the hour without another mass shooting in America, but sad to report, we did not make it. 322, I believe this will be on the mass shooting tote board. Breaking, according to at TMJ4, that's the local TV station in Milwaukee, five people shot at Graceland Cemetery in Racine during a funeral for DeShante King, a man shot by Racine police on May 20th. Five victims being reported by WTMJ4. Thanks for the flag, Fancy Brian. So, there you go. June 2nd, we're up to 322 mass shootings in our nation. Thoughts and prayers. No actions ever necessary.
Yeah, I gotta give credit to our newsman Luke for flagging me on that one. But can we make it through the rest of the show, guys?
323.
Let's lay some bets down. You got an over under on this one?
Two more hours to the end of the show. No, I'm not taking any action on this.
I wish there was a way.
Maybe solutions. We're going to try to offer a few solutions. 844-967-2789. Your opinion's always welcome. More from the Washington Post. I think we left off with, hey, let's raise the age. Maybe on all guns to 21. Gun purchase, gun ownership. Let me read again from the author. Of course, keeping guns out of the hands of young shooters would be difficult because it's so easy for people to obtain guns illegally. But age limits in general have proved to be effective in limiting bad behavior, so it's worth trying. There's another reform that could be even more effective at keeping guns from kids, requiring gun owners to securely store firearms in a lock container or a tamper-resistant mechanical lock. Nearly 4.6 million minors in the United States live in homes where firearms are loaded and easy to access. One analysis from the federal government shows that 76% of school shooters obtain a gun from their homes or the home of relatives. The same is true for more than 80% of teens who take their own lives with a firearm. You know, that is a much bigger number. The school shootings, I mean, it's terrifying because it's so random seemingly. But the number of kids that killed themselves with dad's gun, that's a shockingly high number. Let me read on. Safe storage laws can help, especially with suicides. In Massachusetts, which has the strictest storage laws in the country, guns are used in just 12% of youth suicides, compared with 43% nationally. It's almost like there's a significant statistical, you know, correlation there, Fancy. The suicide rate among youth in the state is nearly half the national average. It's almost like teenagers are impulsive. And if they don't have a easily accessible firearm to kill themselves with, you know, they're less likely to, let's just say, kill themselves. Let me read on. In fact, states requiring locks on handguns in at least some circumstances have 25% fewer suicides per capita and 48% fewer firearm suicides per capita than states without such laws. Is that mathematically significant enough for you folks?
I'd say so. Moves the needle.
And also, they're you know, developing smart guns where only, you know, the guy that bought the gun could actually operate the gun, so your kid can't use your gun. Now, there's some more thoughts here on stopping the flow of guns across state lines. You know what? Because the state borders, they don't really stop the guns from being transmitted against across the borders.
They always say, what about Chicago? But most of those guns come from Indiana. So what about Indiana?
What about Indiana? This author recommends instituting a buyback program. They point towards Australia, where $500 million bought back almost 600,000 guns. And Harvard University researchers found that the gun homicide rate dropped 42% in the 7 years following the law, and the gun suicide rate fell by almost 60%. That's in Australia. They actually did this. Some other countries have taken action. New Zealand, Australia. Hell, Canada is reacting to the mass shootings in our country. They're taking legislative action. A little bit more here. A few more solutions being offered by this author. How about holding gun dealers accountable? Research has shown that in some cities, guns used to commit crimes often come from a small set of gun dealers. So how do you stop the flow of those guns? Let's hold the dealers accountable. In 1999, the federal government published a report identifying gun shops connected with gun crimes, including a single dealer in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, that was linked to a majority of the guns used in the city's crimes. In response to negative publicity, that dealer changed its sales practices. Afterwards, the city saw a 76% reduction in the flow of new guns from that shop to criminals, and a 44% reduction in new crime with guns overall. One freaking shop in Milwaukee supplying all the criminals in town.
And if you think it can't work, you can go after somebody who, a bartender that overserved somebody if that person killed somebody in an accident.
So you know what our Congress did instead? Well, they passed a law in 2003 prohibiting the government from publishing the data. So you can't know if a single gun shop in Milwaukee is supplying all the weapons utilized in most of the crime in the city. After which, the rate of new gun sales from that dealer, you know, the one in Milwaukee, to criminals, well, it shot up 200%. It's like they were right back in the old business of supplying guns to criminals for fun and profit. Of course, I think the vast majority of Americans would agree, strengthen the background checks. Under federal law, only licensed gun dealers have to perform these checks. Private individuals and many online retailers do not. It's hard to pin down exactly how many guns are legally acquired without background check, but some surveys say like 1 in 5, 20+%. So how about universal background checks? And close the boyfriend gap. I know we're not going to get to all these before the hour's up, but an estimated 70 women each month are killed with guns by spouses or dating partners, according to the 2019 analysis of the CDC. Federal law prevents anyone with domestic violence misdemeanors from having a gun, but that law is defined narrowly and doesn't include all domestic violence perpetrators. For example, boyfriends. More specifically, the law doesn't keep guns from abusers who are not married, do not live with their partner, who do not share a child with them. Some states have expanded on federal law, and it works. One study found that the rate of domestic violence-related homicides declined 7% after the state passed, you know, gun laws. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. The happy hour. Tom's joining. I see your call, Tom. If you're patient, you can be a part of this big show. Be like Tom. Call us. 844-967-2789. And oh yeah, number 5, final solution offered. Strengthen the red flag laws. More Devils. We'll be back. Hour 2 is next.
Never again. I say it. Never again.
Then yada, yada, yada.
Make sure you remember in your thoughts and more importantly in your prayers.
Then yada, yada, yada.
Never again. I say it. Never again.